Future-proof. Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
Hashtag believe in science.
You only get to make one, so how important are first impressions and how much influence do we have over them as the face that is making that impression? Well, my next guest has written a book all about first impressions and how quickly people make judgments based on how we look. Here to talk to me about face value is Alex Todorov, a professor of psychology at Princeton. Hi, Alex, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
So how important are good looks then to first impressions?
Well, I mean, good looks are certainly very important, but it's a little bit more than good looks, right? I mean, there is enormous amount of research in psychology showing that attractive people get better outcomes across a variety of domains. But in fact, first impressions are much more than attractiveness. People form impressions about the trustworthiness of others, about their competence, about their dominance. And while some of these judgments tend to kind of co-occur with attractiveness, so on average, people who are perceived as attractive will be perceived as trustworthy, you can actually separate this, and people will act on impressions that are important for the particular situation. So imagine that you have some kind of investment decision and you have to interact with a stranger and you have to make a risky decision whether to invest in them or not. Well, in this particular situation, what would be really important is whether you perceive the person as trustworthy or not, rather than whether they're attractive or not.
No, for sure. But I'm trying to think of the people who we entrust power to, and they seem like quite a mixed bag. I mean, are there facial features that we really ascribe personality traits to? If we see someone who has a quite a low brow and a jutty chin, do we think of them as being quite violent or aggressive?
What we know is that people form these kinds of impressions after incredibly little information. So we've done lots of studies and many other groups have followed up and replicated these findings. But you can flush a face of a stranger you've never seen before, and you can flush it for less than 1/10 of a second. And that provides sufficient information for people to form all sorts of impressions. Is the person intelligent? Is the person competent? Is the person trustworthy? And so on. In fact, essentially, you really don't need more than 160 millisecond exposure to a face to form these kinds of impressions.
Good God.
And your judgments are pretty much the same whether you see the face for a very brief exposure or whether you see it for a second or longer than a second. The only difference that the long exposure makes is that people end up being more confident in these fairly superficial impressions.
Is there any research into how accurate these fleeting impressions we have of people? I mean, have people looked at, when someone looks at a picture and thinks, no, that guy's probably not too smart, does it correlate to IQ?
Well, there are some people who have done research on accuracy. We have done it too. In fact, in my book, I have four entire chapters dedicated to this question, because as you just asked me, once you hear about these kinds of impressions, the very first thing people think, well, are they accurate? And my take after looking closely at the literature and working on this topic for now over 15 years is that there's basically nothing when it comes to reading actual character. First of all, you can generate different images of the same person that will generate completely different impressions. I mean, you can have an image where a person looks very attractive and trustworthy and another image they don't look trustworthy. I mean, this is hard to experience with familiar faces because any image sort of unlocks your knowledge about the person.
Mm. Because of course, our faces are canvases onto which we paint our emotions. When we see a picture of Donald Trump, for example, there's a very famous, often shared image of him where he's got his chin up and he looks really smug, his eyes are squinty, and it just inspires hate because it is the image of someone who is by their expression and emotion is showing that they think they're better than you.
Well, yes, but I would venture a guess that to a huge extent, this is shaped by your prior knowledge and attitudes toward him. right? So
really,
the question. Well, I think I will. I share your feelings to a large extent.
Well, no, I mean, there are some pictures when you see them that surely the emotion comes through on someone's face. You know exactly what they're feeling. Or are there cases where pictures of emotion or ideas of emotion are actually not that easy to determine? Do we think we're better than we are?
Well, for sure, we think we're better than we are when it comes to reading emotional expressions. So I think that to a large extent, once you have a knowledge, it's almost impossible to separate your knowledge of the person from what you see in the image. Hmm. I mean, and I'll give you two examples. One is Jared Lafner was this person who, essentially a murderer, he tried to shot in the head this senator from Arizona and killed six other people 6 years ago. And so in his mugshot, he completely looks crazy. And in fact, it was on the cover page of every major newspaper in the United States. And people and the headings, the titles were, look, the eyes of the evil, the mad, the eyes of madness, and so on, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, 5 years later, you ask Princeton students who were basically teenagers and didn't pay attention at the time, like 10, 15% remember who he was. And so if you show them the image, he looks a bit off, but they don't think he's this evil, crazy guy. And The Guardian, actually, is the only newspaper which run a different image of him, and he looks like this perfectly nice, young guy. So knowledge is very, very hard to dissociate from what we see in the image. Mm. And another example, we've done some work which is described in the last chapter of the book with extreme expressions of emotions, pain, pleasure. But for many of the studies, we used faces of tennis players because they're available. And you can take a shot right after they win or after they lose a point. And these are high-stakes games. And so the question is, when people see the faces, would they be able to tell whether they're happy or upset from what happened? And guess what? People have no idea. They're completely a chance. If you just show the faces...
Really?
Everything looks pretty much kind of negative. I mean, the book is richly illustrated, and you can, you know, because for this kind of work, you really have to see the images to get the argument, because people always say, well, that's probably not true. But if you show the bodies of the players, people are pretty good. They know what happened.
No, and if you show... this actually makes sense to me, because there's a type of chocolate... dessert that you can buy in the French Paradox. It's a restaurant in Balls Bridge. It's called the Chocolate mm-hmm. Bomb, and it's essentially chocolate fondant. Mm-hmm. And I always order it when I go there. I don't order it anywhere else, but when I go there, I always order it, and I make sure that they have one before I make my reservation. Because when you cut into it, the chocolate just oozes out in this way that is just majestic. And Dara always describes my face when I eat this as just, she said, that's the French Paradox face. And I put a spoon of this fondant into my face, and my face crunches into this moment where I'm trying to savor every molecule of the chocolate fondant. But that face is actually, if you were to take a photograph of my face, it could look like I'm tasting something disgusting, because you scrunch your face together to savor it, but actually it could also look like something really bitter is in your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly the experience. And what happens, though, is that your brain, I mean, whoever is observing you, and especially if they know your past history with this dessert, then they will know immediately what's going on. And although the face on its own is not providing sufficient information, everything else in the situation gives you lots of information, and your brain disambiguates extremely quickly what is going on. So you never... You know, you don't ever experience this kind of illusion. Oh, I think it's the face, but it's actually something else, because we don't run these kinds of experiments in real life.
Yeah, but first impressions aren't just of someone's face, though, are they? I mean, when you meet someone for the first time, I think it extends just beyond the handshake or greeting. I think that to me is what I would define as a first impression. So it's what they're wearing, how they smell, how their hair is, if they're clean or dirty, the handshake, the eye gaze, you know, how they're physically, posture and everything. And is that something that you look into? I mean, whether or not those sort of, because I can understand why faces might be inaccurate, but you would imagine when you get all that information, all that sensory information, that you have a pretty solid idea.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's absolutely true. I mean, these impressions, you know, it's not that not based on his isolated face. I mean, that's what you do in the, when you conduct experiments in the lab and you're specifically interested in face perception. Mm. But in real life, you don't interact with disembodied faces. And in fact, many critics of Lavater from Lavater's time, including people like Goethe and Georg Christoph Lichtenberg, had this to say in 18th century, that look, you can tell much more about a person from what kind of clothes they wear, from the cut of their clothes, from you know, exactly this kind of a attire or other external features than from thousands of profiles. And this is probably true. But you see, what's happening there is all of this is strategically selected to some extent, right? I mean, how you groom, how, I mean, this is all, in a sense, it's to the extent that this is some indication of your character or personality, it is certainly plausible, but it is something, the way we dress, the way we groom ourselves, it's a way to present ourself to the world.
Yeah, so I mean, of course that'll be sort of indicative of our character because it's how we've decided to present ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, there's lots of interesting studies and also our environment. I mean, you can look into the bedroom of somebody and inference from what you see in their bedroom a kind of indicative how open they are to experience. You can look in the office of a person and you can say how conscientious they are. Mm. So there are these sorts of correlations. But again, they're not very high correlations. You know, we're talking of the sort of 0.30, 0.40, which is, if you think about 10% of what you see could be accounted your impression from, the accuracy of your impression from these kinds of cues.
There are people who have managed to take advantage of this certainty that we have in our first impressions, that, you know, that people think, well, I know what this sort of person's like because I can tell straight away. Like Billy Beane is a great example of this,
yes,
the general
absolutely.
Manager of the Oakland
yes.
A's.
Yes. Yeah, actually, I use examples from his book, from The Money Ball, because it is a perfect example with, you know, Billy Beane has been incredibly successful manager running a baseball team, which consistently has one of the best records and has the one of the lowest payroll in the Major League Baseball. And how he does it? By exploiting the prejudice of appearances. That's what he does. He doesn't trust appearance. He relies on statistical information. And in baseball, it's a field which you have tons of information. He actually would never hire players straight from high school because there's not enough statistical information. But college players, he will look into college players. There's enough information, and often this would be guys that never even dreamed to be drafted in Major League Baseball. So they're really surprised. Because, and why they're surprised? Because they didn't look the part. They just don't look good. They don't look like, they don't have the good face. And baseball scouts actually have this expression of that somebody has the good face, meaning they will be a great professional baseball player. And that's how he does it. And then, you know, he brings them to the team, the Oakland A's. In a couple of years, they show that they're really good. And then he can trade them for lots of money.
Yeah, I mean, there is that sort of prejudice in almost anything you would imagine. Like someone doesn't have the figure for ballet or someone doesn't have the sort of face that you would associate with a particular job. And you'd imagine... you know, if you had particularly longer legs or, you know, stubby arms or, you know, you just didn't look like a baseball player, that the sort of superstition that goes with baseball, I mean, it's a very superstitious sport, that you could see that Billy Beane's approach of just looking at the stats could be very effective, and it clearly has.
Yeah, it clearly has, yeah.
So can we control this? Can I stop someone from making a poor first impression? Because God knows, if you ask my wife, I've made so many poor first impressions.
Well,
and
I mean,
rightly
I...
so. Can I fix that?
Well, I mean, I think that it just would be a futile advice to say don't do that, because you cannot not do that. I mean, like, you know, if I tell you don't look at faces, well, you cannot not look at faces. I mean, it's our attention to faces kind of reflexive. So you cannot do that, really. But what you can is, if it's an important decision, you can structure the decisions in a way where appearance information comes at the end of the process, or it doesn't come at all. I mean, if you're interviewing a prospect, if you're interviewing a future employee, before the interview, you should have all of the available information that is diagnostic for future performance, like letters of reference, records of past performance, and things that are really diagnostic for how they're going to do, rather than relying on interviews, which happen to be almost useless in predicting future success. This is unstructured interviews. You just meet with somebody, there's no some kind of specific questions that are probing for particular skills. I mean, there's research for now 40 years in psychology that they predict basically next to nothing in terms of how well people will do.
Wow. And of course, that seems to be one of the most, one of the largest factors in whether or not someone gets a job, these sort of face-to-face interviews. So you're saying don't do the face-to-face interview first, do that. Once you've gotten all the information, so that you've...
Absolutely, yeah. And even then, I would, most of the time, for example, shy people are not going to do well in an anxiety-provoking interview situation.
Sure.
And they might be incredibly creative. They might be the best employee for the job, but you wouldn't get this from the interview.
Yes. And I can think of several people who I've thought, I'm not sure if this particular role suits that type of person, and they've gone on to shine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But one thing I do have to ask, there are some people that when you look at them, you know that they have had a difficult life.
Yes. This is true. In fact, I have a chapter in the book called Life Leaves Traces on Our Faces.
Mm.
And one of the very interesting findings is it was a very large longitudinal study which followed for years thousands of twins in Denmark. And for elderly, when it comes to elderly, well, the important predictor, the strongest predictor of how long you're going to live is your biological age. No surprise, obviously.
Yeah.
But the second big one, in fact, as large as this study, and as the authors put it, better than any DNA test that is available right now, is how old you look relative to your biological age. So twins who looked younger ended up living longer. And so what is going on here? Well, the first main factor, obviously, is genetic luck. But the second thing is, if you come from a higher socioeconomic status, which comes with better health care, lots of resources, if you're not chronically exposed to sun, being a farmer or a fisherman, for example, if you don't have a chronic condition, if you don't smoke, all of these things make you look younger. So, yes, indeed, if you have a hard life, you will look worse off when you're in 50 and later than if your life is much better off. And so, I mean, faces are parts of our bodies. Now, the question is this something about the character of the person or life circumstances?
Hmm. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting one to end on and think about. Really interesting speaking with you.
Thank you.
Alex Todorov is author of Face Value, The Irresistible Influence of First Impressions. Alex, thank you so much for coming to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Future Proof. Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
#BelieveInScience.